signal report.
7LT, KS4CHY. Got a little white noise behind you, but you're perfectly copyable.
K4CHY, I believe it is, 87LT. Name's Dan, Delta Alpha November. We're handheld from the basement, so, and TR, so I don't doubt that it's probably a little bit scratchy. Over.
Dan, name here is Keith. I'm over in Seneca, and for a handheld in the basement, saying you're doing an excellent job. Over.
Roger. Yeah, I took the plunge. This is ICOM ID 52A. I've been, it's a learning curve. I've made one D-Star connection. FM's pretty easy to use, of course. But anyway, it's kind of fun. A little different from usual. The analog, if you can hear anything on D-Star, it's crystal clear like you're sitting in a room. Over.
Those are nice little radios. I wouldn't mind having one myself. I just recently got a new one, but it's just an Intone DMR radio, the 878 Plus with Bluetooth. It's pretty nice. I haven't got it completely set up yet, but working on a fella ham's DMR setup, so trying to get that going, and then I'll work back on mine.
The South Carolina Heart System, of course, is linked up all over the state. A couple of Paris Mountain repeaters. I'm not real sure how the DMR interfaces with analog system myself. Yeah, I've got a DMR Intone rig, too. I just haven't set it up yet. Anyway, as I've gotten older, I've just decided that rather than just hear about digital this, then that, I'm trying to explore these avenues. Keep my noggin sharp, if it will. Might be a lost cause there, but anyway. Okay, Keith, I'll let you go. Thanks for the quick signal report. You have a great start of your weekend. This is 87LT. Be clear on your phone.
Dan, you do the same, and good talking to you, and we'll catch you later down the log. I believe it's 87LT, KF4CHY. I'll be clear and listening.
CHY and 4OVQ, crossband repeat.
Yes, what did we woke up?
Roger. I didn't catch who that was.
Yeah, I was just poking at you. Are you doing all right this morning?
Recognize your voice when you said it like that. Yeah, I'm good. I figured you done been down the road.
Not far from walking out the door.
I was going to let you know, I called Anthony last night and made no return on that open spot.
I haven't got to delve into it yet, but I think I might know what the problem is. I bet it defaults to time slot 1, and I probably have it for time slot 2. Over.
Yeah, I hope that's the problem. I mean, I can tell he was disheartened, you know. I mean, and I get it. I understand. But hopefully that it'll work out okay for
him. BQ, KN4CHY, that's what you are right under ID. I'm almost, I'm probably 75-80% sure that's what it is. Like I said, I just haven't had time to delve into it. When we get back tomorrow evening, it'll be a pretty quick fix, so I'll probably go ahead and do that. So let him know all hope is not lost yet. Over.
Roger, I sure will. That'll make him somewhat feel a little bit better. They still hope. Man, y'all gonna have a quick trip.
Things we do for dear old mom, you know. And it's all of us are doing the same thing. In fact, they're a little closer than we are, so they're coming in tomorrow at, you know, like lunchtime or so, and we'll do dinner and sit around and socialize for a bit, and we'll all head back down.
Well, I wasn't thinking. I mean, I get it now. Yeah, why are you doing a quick trip? I don't forget. there again. No age, but I done forgot about Mother's Day. I just went blank on that, I guess. Over.
Roger that. It kind of snuck up on me. I wasn't expecting it this weekend until, maybe last weekend or one day the prior week. It dawned on me that, oh, man, I guess we'll be going to Savannah.
Well, I'm just fooling around in here. I'm charging up all my little handhelds, my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bowfangs. They ain't been charged in a long time, so I'm trying to get everything charged up and see what. I think I'm having issues with one battery on one. I don't think this won't be charged, but anyway, I heard you come in there, and I said, well, I'll catch him before he gets too far down the road and can't hit the repeater, over.
Like I said, we're about to hit the road. I'm on the radio in the house right now. So you just kind of hanging around. If you are, monitor SB upstate. I've got Bluetooth paired with that radio, and I'm going to try that out. Back to the open spot thing, yeah, it seemed like everything's functioning fine on the open spot, so I don't think there's going to be an issue beyond that time slot, over.
Stacy, N4DJC.
Graham in the radio.
Jerry, and I missed that, Stacy, what'd you say?
You got to do now. Is that going to be in the open spot or in the program of the radio, or you got to change both of them?
Probably go either way, but I'll probably change it in the radio since that's the default setup for the open spot.
All right, Keith. Well, I'll let you go. I can't do a thing with neither one of my MD-380s. They just want to boot up down. I mean, I don't get it. I can hear one-sided conversations. I don't know what went wrong with that. I just think it's that tattoos. I mean, I ain't sure, but I feel like why would both of them do the same thing? And so I've been listening this morning to the care son, but like I say, I can't disconnect. Go.
If I get those straightened out too when I get back. N4DJC, KN4CHY, how's Jerry this morning?
You must be on your way to Savannah, I guess. And Stacy, I hope you get those things figured out. I hadn't gotten into DMR yet. I got a Zoom spot hotspot mine set up on D Star right now.
Very good to hear you, and I still hadn't quite got that call sign down there. But anyway, I'm going to get out of here for a little bit, and I'll put that thing on upstate, Keith, and I'll talk to y'all later. N4OVQ, crossband repeat, I'll be doing other stuff.
NUE, mobile.
Well, all right, Stacy. We'll holler at you a little later on upstate. And, Jerry, I was about to walk out the door, so I guess I'll let you have it. You and Chad carry on. Good morning, Chad. KN4CHY.
Be safe on your trip, bud. And to your mother, happy Mother's Day. 73.
Have a good trip, Danny. Be safe. Throw a hand up and you go out, you bald if you get close then that way. I guess I don't know where you're going that way. You may be going down interstate there, but hope you have a good trip down there. Savannah's not I've been down there several times over the years. It's just not my favorite spot.
Yes, it ain't mine either. Probably if it wasn't for Mama living there, I don't know if I'd go back. Maybe a tourist visit, but traffic's just horrible down there. But yeah, we're heading in that general direction down US 1, and then when we get to I-16 there, that's our decision point. Either we head straight and go to the farm, or we hang a left and go to the Savannah. Over.
Good morning, Chad. Hope you're doing well.
Jerry, I'm I'm really sore, but I'm above ground. That's good, I guess.
By yesterday, before yesterday, I said, I'd rather be seen than viewed.
Right. That's a good way of looking at it. Good morning.
I've been out this morning already to the sun. I got an eye problem. My son's kind of sensitive. My eyes were bright and shiny this morning. But I'm doing okay. We ain't got much going on today. I don't think we're getting ready for the kids to come over tomorrow for Mother's Day thing. They usually go out on the boat and then come back, and you know, we usually have tacos or something like that after they get off the pontoon. So I think that's what we're planning for tomorrow. Nothing complex. Keith, y'all do be careful going in. That's a long ride. That seems like it's a lot longer than it's supposed to be.
You're right about that. And it doesn't help that it's the same trip for us every time. So we kind of know it like the back of our hands. I could probably just take a nap in the truck and do it. Over.
Great, Jeff.
I've just left the Disney. I'm trying to decide whether I won't talk on the radio anymore or watch this entertainment here in front of me going down Main Street in Pickens. There's a couple of miles from the camp, there's a guy up here that does rodeoing, and he rents out these bulls, for these cowboy riders. And he's got a gooseneck trailer full of these bulls. And they ain't happy about being cooped up in this trailer together. And they right in front of me on the truck. And boy, they are going at it.
Got it. Had it, guy here in Anderson used to cut my hair for years. He got a load of pulled up somewhere up around town or somewhere up that area, and the bull got him in the corner, stalked him and killed him. That thing weighed about 2,000 pounds. I don't know what he was doing in there with that bull. Had a guy that I worked with that used to do a little rodeo, and we went down to Washington one time. One of the mini rodeos down over in Chester, South Carolina. He either got on a bull or a horse. I don't know which one brought one of that. I don't know what he got on, but when he got off, he looked like a bicycle wheel with about half the spokes missing.
All broke up, huh? Boy, that just makes me hurt thinking about that.
Yeah, that ground feels harder when you've been thrown from a horse or something like that. It almost feels like it. Instead of falling from 4 feet, you fell from 10.
Horse one time, and he didn't like me being on his back. He didn't buck me off or nothing, but he run up under a limb on a tree and used that limb to knock me off the back of him, and I never got back on another one. That did not feel well.
I know you've been on a horse too, probably, in your lifetime. Especially being that part of the country, I guess. Everybody had to throw the leg over one at least once. About twice, three times, about all I was good for. I learned my lesson the last time.
After that, we normally had one at the farm most of the time. And I tell you, the one Chad was on sounds more like a Shetland pony. That was what we had the first time. And I have not heard any stories about a Shetland pony where they don't try to drag you off their back, either scrubbing against a barbed wire fence or taking you under a low scrub oak or something to get you off their back. Over.
Some ponies are bang good, but for one thing, we had one too. I used to have one, but when I lived in Hartwell, when I was just a kid, we had one. They built a fence right in the lower part of the lot there and had it down there, and that daggum thing, it was big for a Shetland. And my granddaddy, he'd been gone for since 60 or 61, he told me we finally put it out on a family farm we had in Hart County. And I said, what do you think about it, Pappy? He said, that thing ain't worth a burnt match.
Oh, that sounds like my Pappy. That sounds just like him.
great. It baffles me how they can pack so much mean into a little pony that size, but I don't know a one that's gentle. Every one I've heard of is like that. Anyway, guys, see y'all later. Can 4 CHY, I'm going QRT this time.
Talk to you later.
KL4NUE, what you got on the schedule for today, Jerry?
Right now, I'm not looking for anything to do, Chad. you working, not working up there this morning, or what?
Yesterday, put my tower up here at the deer camp, and I was going to try to do a little bit more on it today, but Jerry, I'm sore. I can't hardly walk. Can't move. Can't walk. Back hurts. Neck hurts. Back of my neck hurts. Everything hurts. So I think I'm just going to head on back to the house, try to lick my wounds for a couple of days.
Especially when you're handling stuff. Well, what kind of tower did you put up? How tall and what kind of construction?
It's aluminum frame. It's 20 feet. But I've got it on top of the cabin, so I'm going to say it's probably around anywhere 30 to 35 feet to the top of the tower. Now, I've got another, 8 feet or so. I'll go up with the crossbar with that. But I've got it so I can hinge it and, drop it down on the roof and do what I need to on the roof. But, boy, it's just, like I said, it's a lot of work. I mean, just a lot of work, doggone radio.
I'd have a party of five or six guys that we had last time. It's been years ago. I haven't been able to do any kind of work like that for years. Been years ago, back in 82, 83, we had a group to help put up one of my buddy's towers. His was about close to 70 feet, I guess. And luckily, we had a real pro help us out, and we had a gin pole and had the whole nine yards, and we got a guy and everything around. I think he put up his was around 25G, I think, and yeah, them sections, they ain't light now. They're pretty heavy. But, like I said, we were lucky. We had a guy that was in, had been in commercial radio before he became a ham. So he worked, putting up towers for Motorola folks and the whole deal. So he was a huge help to us. But he found it by himself. That's just hard work.
About that, but I did get it up. It's up and anchored, and next time I come up, I'll tilt it over and then get my ground wire run, get my feed lines run, and get my antenna. I'm focused on getting me an antenna built this week, and when I get it built, then I'll go ahead and set it up, I guess.
What you gonna put up there?
Build me a 12 element Yagi. I had, pretty good success with the three elements. So I'm on try 12 element this time, but try to get it built, tested out, so I can get it up. The WX4PG repeater up here. They put a new antenna on their repeater for the packet machine, and it sure does have a good signal from camp. So I'm gonna take advantage of that and use digital modes a little bit. But I got a 80 meter dipole up here that works pretty good. Kind of happy with it, for what I do. But other than that, I might add some other stuff later, but right now that's what I'm gonna do.
Had it covered to me. That'll be plenty enough for 2 liters, and you got a rotor?
Yeah, I do. I'm not, I don't know what to think about it, but I'll figure it out.
TV rotors for the most part, from my lighter weight stuff. I don't think I had anything any bigger than 9 elements there. But I used those old Alliance 100s or whatever they were. They were rebranded, I think, but they would handle a pretty good size antenna. But I never had any trouble. Mine was up about, had mine up mounted on top of an apartment building on the second floor, and I guess the antenna was probably about pretty close to 40 feet above the terrain.
Well, like I said, I'm not climbing. I am not going to do it. So, I wouldn't mind tree spikes. I can do tree spikes and a belt. You know, I got me a little kit. And used to climb a lot when I was in the military, hanging wire and stuff. But, I just still got the kit, but it just a lot of work doing that too.
Something's quick when you're not 25 years old, either. It makes a big difference. I said I was probably in my late 20s, mid late 20s when I was doing most of the stuff early on. And I didn't have I was never scared of heights much. I mean, I was some, but. Like I told me when we were doing outward bound stuff back when I was about 22, 23, so once you get above 30 feet, it don't matter then. It don't matter if you're 30 or 300. If you fall, you'll get about the same result.
You're exactly right. You know, 30 feet don't look, you know, when you're down on the ground looking up, it just doesn't look that high. But boy, when you're up there, that's a different story, isn't it?
And I remember when I first started deer hunting back in the late 60s, early 70s, people just started using tree stands, and they had those Bakers and that sort of thing, you know, and I used one and kind of added on to it so it wouldn't slip around. But a lot of guys, they wouldn't get much higher than 10 feet. I said, that ain't gonna do you no good there. I said, you need to get up about 15 or 18 feet. And I said, you know, you can see more and get above the scent line a little bit. And I remember seeing many a guy that hunt on public land back then, take them to a location, leave them, and go where I was gonna put mine up. And they'd get about 8 or 10 feet above ground. That was it. And I said, that ain't gonna do anything. Of course, you can see the deer go out up high enough to leave off the trees, and you can see deer just moving around them, you know. See anything? I didn't see anything. I said, well, you had pretty nice deer around you then. Of course, I was bow hunting. I didn't have a rifle then. But I said, you got to get up high enough. 15 feet is about right for me. I wouldn't get up. You could get 15 feet off the ground unless I was in an airplane.
I used to do some deer hunting growing up. But me and Dad, we primarily did hog hunting. We had at one time we had about 35 hounds, and we'd go to about 90 miles past Valdosta, Georgia, down in Buckville, Florida. And we'd stay down there for about 21 days and in hog hunt. And every year we'd go. And we'd haul all them dogs down there. And it looked like a gypsy wagon headed down to Florida, you know, 4 or 5 trucks full of this and full of that. But we had a good time. We killed a lot of hogs over the years.
Someone I was headed down to Florida a few weeks ago on the way down and the way back, too. And I lived in southwest Georgia, so I used to see a fair amount, but they weren't as bad in that part of the state as they are in the towards Valdosta Center in the eastern part of the state for whatever reason. But we never saw many of them, and they were... Most of them we did see, Chad, they just got all feral. They were just... They weren't dark like the ones are nowadays, Dad. has started getting in with those some of those European boars people let out.
The Russian boar.
Russian European boars, you know, were big and dark, and these you know, look like just feral domestic pigs, but they've been out long enough, you know, started breeding out in the wild, and they just and then. We didn't see the dark Russian ones. You know, this has been 50 years ago. We didn't see any of those down in that part of the country then, but we did see them on the eastern side of the Georgia, around Savannah River and all that down that area. We started seeing them back about 75, 76, somewhere late 70s. And, of course, up North Carolina, they've always had those dark ones up there, dark-looking ones up there, because Vanderbilt, Biltmore, they had them up there, and he imported them, and that's how all that stuff started, I think.
Hey, it's KO4NUE in 4DJC. We had a Russian boar in captivity for years. We put him out there in the pasture, put rings in his nose so he wouldn't root out, but he was club-footed. He didn't have a split hoof like a, you know, normal pig did. He had one hoof. And we had the professor from, I believe it was Louisiana State. Him and some students come down here and spend a couple of days on farm and, you know, measuring things and asking questions and all kind of stuff, you know. I think he's doing some kind of study. I forget what it was, but big old boar, right? I think I wouldn't be afraid to say he's probably around 350, 400 pounds. He's a big old boy.
Killing some big ones around here. One of the guys my son works with has got a place down towards outside of Abbeville, and they hunt them at night with night vision. I've seen some, you know, they need front end loaders to get them boys up. They were big, big boys, 400 pounds. That's not the kind of stuff we saw. We didn't see anything that big by a long shot. In the last 20 years anyway, then we started seeing some big ones out there, and they tear up everything they go through anyway. It's just, they got to be with it, just a nuisance now.
You're right about that. Dad's got one mounted. We had a golf course. We did work with the dogs we had a contract with a golf course down in Sherrill County. It was Sherrill or Kershaw, I can't remember. And we'd come down there and had a housing development around the golf course. And Dad had a contract with them. We'd bring catch dogs down there and, you know, try to keep populations under control. And one of them got off of the golf course and ended up in housing development, and the dogs caught it, and I got him hemmed up in the corner of a woman's house. She had big old azalea patch. Boy, them dogs in that hog, they tore them things all to pieces, and she got mad. We lost the contract over that, but they just leveled the whole flower patch. But we got the pig. Daddy's got it mounted on the over the hearth in the house. And let me let my radio drop, Jerry. Got a big old rubber tongue in his mouth. I don't know, it's about 8 inches long. And anytime kids come over to the house, Daddy pulls that old rubber tongue out, and it just freaks a child out when they see that, you know.
Sherrill for a while. That Sherrill is Chesterfield County. It might have been Kershaw, but we had a few Sherrill, but you know, they got a state park down there that's got a golf course on it. But it might have been in Kershaw. It sounds more like it might be Kershaw, because that's a little bit more hogs up in that area than I think around, than they are around in Chesterfield County. But There are some down there. I just don't remember. I went hunting down there a bunch of times when I lived down there, but I don't ever remember seeing one, but then there might have been some in the area down there.
Well, we hunted, Jerry, I don't know, I'd say probably 15, 18 years. Just a big deal, you know. We'd go down there and hog hunt, and then big old rattlesnakes. I don't know, just a lot of memories down there, you know, with that and all the dogs and whatnot. And we lost a couple of dogs to rattlesnake bites. Lost a couple of dogs, period. Just never found them. And we had a little Airedale that we kept, and she got cut up pretty bad one year. And I remember little old bitty fella, friend of the family, was driving, and Daddy's sitting in pastor seat, and he had Minnie laying on my lap, and I had a T-shirt holding her insides in until we could get to the vet. But I never will forget that. Never will.
They're tough dogs. I've seen some big ones. They'll make good guard dogs, too. But, I was just thinking, I'm surprised y'all didn't get involved in bear hunting. They still run, they used to have hunts up there around Ball Hollow every once in a while. I know they had some party hunts up there. It's been years since I've been up there during the hunt. But didn't you tell me y'all had some Pyrenees? There's a guy down below us down here that's got some goats and llamas and other stuff out there, and he's got a couple of great Pyrenees he has out in his pasture, I noticed at night.
We got two. We got a male and female who watches over the goats and the chickens. Female thinks she's a chicken, and the male thinks he's a goat. Because they do a good job. I tell you that they will surprise you. You know.
I'm out down in the daytime. I was driving through there the other night, and I saw wife was driving. Actually, she said, "What's those two white things out there?" I said, "That looks like some Pyrenees. They probably got them out to protect the goats and the other livestock there." And I think they must let them out at night. They had two. I mean, I could tell. I knew they were Pyrenees because of the size and the color. I said, "But they must be." I said, "That's got to be what they're there for, because that's what they." That's a job for
them. So, just kind of let you know, the two we've got, Dad put some, kind of let you know how protective they are. Dad got a bright idea one year. He's going to put some bluebird houses on the fence posts that run down the front of the pasture. And they wasn't going to have it. Every time a bluebird tried to get in the fence, they just aggravate the snot, you know, out of the thing, shake, get up. The male finally figured out he could stand up on his hindquarters and shake the fire out of the pole to keep mama aggravated so bad that they couldn't nest in it, couldn't build a nest in it. So he'd take them down.
Wooden fence as well as it is now. It's got hog wire on the bottom and two strands of barb across the top of it. But it's kind of in the low part of the area down there. And I noticed at one time they had a couple of wood boxes out there, but I don't see them now. I don't know whether it was on their property and they enclosed them and took them down or what. But I would imagine they wouldn't let no wood duck get in there either, but they were, wood duck boxes weren't very high, they weren't high enough off the ground, I didn't think, you know, where that marsh was, they were kind of low. I think whoever set them in there too low, but I noticed they weren't there. I didn't see them, anyway, it might have grown up around them, but I didn't see them the last time I went through there. But yeah, they got a pretty, pretty good sized little pasture. It's not like it's just, it looks like it's kind of a hobby farm or something like that. It's not, you know, you don't have much, you ain't talking about no 20 acres or nothing like that.
Well, we got, you can't bring anything new into the pasture and drop it off. We've got a Cajun area that, you know, if you're going to bring in a new goat or you're going to bring in a new chicken, and I mean, bring cat in if you want to, but it's got to stay in that cage for, you know, 24 to 48 hours. And they'll kind of be aggressive with it up front, you know, but can't get to it because it's in the cage. But they'll sit right there and watch it and smell it and walk around it and, you know, get used to it. And then once you let them stay in there a while and they figure out it's not a threat, then you open the cage and they'll walk right out. And at that point, they just become part of the herd, whatever it is. But you can't just open the gate and drop something loose. It's going to die.
Yeah, well, I said, I'm surprised they put them out there with those llamas. Those llamas usually do a pretty good job of keeping the coats and stuff like that away. I didn't see any donkeys out there. Most people run sheep, run donkeys too. But I didn't notice any sheep or anything. I just noticed the little pygmy goats and had a couple of high-bellied pigs out there for a while. But golly, them things, they were huge. I've seen some big ones. But I had seen, they had one out there. I don't see that thing could move. It's a fact. But they got those Great Pyrenees out there, but I'm surprised they got them. And llamas are kind of suspicious of other animals too. Keith was talking about Shetland ponies being mean. Them llamas, they can be kind of tough too.
It just, you know, spit at you. I can't. We never could do that. But we did consider bear hunting a couple of times. We went to a bear fight, went to a couple of bear fights up in Chesney one year, years and years and years ago. And, the bear, you know, hunting a pig is one thing. They ain't got no claws. You know, a bear reach out and grab a dog and, do a lot of damage real quick. You know, pig can too, with a tut, if it's a male, got tusk and all, you know. But we just took care of our dogs and thought a lot of the dogs, and we enjoyed them more than hunt, you know. So we just tried not to get them in a position where they, you know, get hurt. And Dad just said, I don't think this is for us. So we ended up, you know, hog hunting, and it's been years and years. I've just had some, you know, really, really good memories with it. I miss doing that, but it's a lot of work.
When you got a pack that big, you can do that. That really helps with safety of dogs too. A lot of these guys don't run but two or three dogs or so. Yeah, but you get a good number of dogs out there, and you got a good one or two good catch dogs. They can pretty well take advantage of the situation. But if you ain't got but three dogs, something like some of these guys run, that's dangerous for the dogs especially. Great uncle, actually, he ran lions in Arizona back in the 50s and 60s before they put him on the endangered list. And he usually ran about five or six dogs, but he was always having to replace them all the time because those lions, they'll turn around. It's like getting hold of a chainsaw when they turn on a dog.
We lost one to an alligator one year. That was not pleasant to see at all. And I mean, Jerry, there was nothing we could do. Stand on the bank and holler. But that the alligator didn't gear. They, you know, you holler all you want. But, you know, I'll never forget that. Standing on the bank, and we'd been in the canal. You know, the dogs crossed the canal. And we'd been in it two or three times, you know, crossing back and forth. And I guess he heard all the commotion and come down the canal waiting where we'd been crossing all morning. And, boy, he got her. We never did see her again.
I haven't seen an alligator take anything like that. When I was living in South Georgia, a couple of places down towards Blakely, which is way down in the corner of the state down there, is there'd be some gators and some of the pines down there. And we were fishing on the pond. The guy told me, he said, there's a couple of alligators out here. It wasn't a pond. It was big. It was more like a lake. Yeah, I said, blackwater lakes, pine rivers down there, creeks down there, and you can't see them up on the water. And the only time I ever seen one take anything was there was a duck, looked like a domesticated duck out there, and it got a little too close to the shoreline. That gator, about a 5 foot gator, come out and got that duck, and that's bad. All we heard was a little bit of cracking and some feathers, and that was all she wrote.
So, let's see, alligator, rattlesnake. I think one of the most interesting memories was the boys down there in Florida. We did it for sport. We bring back a little bit of meat, but them boys down there, I mean, they're doing it for meat, you know. So, they don't waste nothing. I mean nothing. We'd hunt all day, and then we'd come back to camp, and, you know, we'd cook usually what we killed that day. And they fixed this thing called Haslett stew. And it was whole Valdez onions, rice, hog lungs, liver, and heart. And you boil it up in this big stew and pour it over rice. And Jerry, I couldn't do it, Bo. I couldn't do it.
To be on a diet that day, that don't appeal to me. I mean, I've been to a lot of game cookouts and fall game dinners and seen all kinds of stuff. I'd have to give a hard pass on that.
Heart and liver. It was hard, but I could do it. But that lung, well, you cut it up pieces, you know. And that lung, it, the more you chew it, the bigger it got. It just, golly, it was awful.
Blood shoot very soon, I don't like the idea of that. Of course, I've had heart and stuff like that, liver, but not big. But it's not something I'd eat on a weekly or eat my monthly basis. I don't eat that stuff much anymore. But anyway, that sounds about right. I've seen all people eat all kinds of stuff and talk about how good it was. And I said, well, your sense of taste isn't like mine, just like mine ain't like yours.
KL4NUE and N4DJC. So we stayed in a place called Buckville, and it was a they got a lot of timber down there that the paper company owns, I guess, and they, you know, they'll pulp wood or whatever, and just hundreds of thousands of acres of it, and they'll come in and cut all of the trees. Take them years to get it, you know, harvested. And when they cut all the trees out, the town just kind of shuts down, and they move on. And well, anyway, we stayed in this old motel called Buckville Motel. That thing been condemned for, I don't know, since they cut out all the trees. And no power, you know, they disconnected the power when they pulled up and left, and we carried a generator, and we'd hook into the power block there, you know, to get power. But boy, Jerry, nasty, my gosh, you know, old condemned thing, just snakes. You know, you'd have to go in there and clean the place up. And spiders, I can't do spiders. Well, one year we went down and cleaned everything up, you know, Clorox, and you know, you just get it as clean as you can. And had a little walkway there. He connected all the rooms that, you know, park your car up front or whatever. And I come out on the walkway, barefooted, look down, there's a big, big old spider. And, you know, I don't do spiders. And I don't know, that thing's probably 3 inches, in, you know, in round. And that's some gun, I swear it hissed at me, Jerry. Oh, man, no way. And it, knowing it come out of one of them rooms, I'm fixing to go in there and sleep. I seemed like I slept in the truck next 2 days till I got so tired it didn't matter. But I never will forget that either. That some gun was huge.
I mean, I don't like those insects that'll bite you. And I ain't much of a snake person. I don't mind the nine poisonous ones, but poisonous snakes, I just ain't got no use for them in the yard. I hadn't seen that many out in the wild over the years. I've seen more in the yard and around here than I have out in the wild. I used to run across boxes to get bit and copperheads and stuff like that when I fished and hunted, but they generally weren't close enough to be a problem. I was down in South Georgia bass fishing one evening. It was late, and I had one of those old jitterbugs, and I know, you know what a jitterbug is. That thing just, you know, top water plug, you pull that thing in, and I got down there, and we used to wear those old miners lamp things, like the, can't remember the brand name now, but it's the ones that used to, you know, all these coon hunters used to wear. Yeah, we'd flip those things on, put them around the head. Then I saw those eyes shining. I said, "What?" I said, "Mac, my buddy, I said, "Mac, what is that shining?" He said, "That's a digging beetle water moccasin I've ever seen." Of course, you couldn't tell whether it was a moccasin or one of those old bandit water snakes. And the water snake, they'll bite the, you know, wood out of you. And that digging, whatever it was, he grabbed a hold of that lure. And Mac said, "What you gonna do?" I said, "I don't know what you gonna do." I said, "I'm cutting the line. He can have that thing."
I think that's called a wheat light. We got a battery pack you wear on your side. The battery pack was red and black. And then, you know, got a cord that comes up your back. And, you know, we still got two of them. Because in the off season, I'd coon hunt. We had a couple of dogs that just wasn't interested in hogs at all. And I'd work with them on raccoons. So during the off season, Dad bought a couple wheat lights so we could coon hunt. And I'd snake get on a jitterbug or something like that. Yeah, I'll cut the line too. He can have it. It's not worth it.
Bought any snake baits until I lived down there for a little while. There was a place down in Albany, Georgia, that used to sell them down there. You could either buy them off the shelf or get them custom made, Russell. I bought a pair of Russell, and I think I paid about $90 for those things. That was a lot of money back in the early 70s, but they weren't worth every penny. And I had them. I wore them, used them up until about when I stopped hunting about 15 years ago. But down there, I mean, you know, you just wore snake boots when you went out near a pond or something like that, or when you were out there, because there were rattlesnakes everywhere down there. And, you know, when the linemen and folks like that wear them, the best thing for you to do is just follow the advice of the pros.
You're right. But the snake leggings we had, I forget the brand we had. I forget what they were, but they were expensive. Gold camouflage had, I forget what kind of material it was made out of, but hot, my goodness, it's so hot. But, you know, you have to wear them. I mean, especially down there, if you stay on logging roads, it wasn't that, you know, wasn't that big a deal. But, you know, dogs catch off in a tie tree patch or something, you know. You got to suit up because some of them snakes down there are huge.
You know, Thomas DeBells, they used to be one of my customers when I was selling machinery. And they made a brand called Rattler's brand. Caps, leggings, and that sort of thing. I never had any. I just had my snake bits because they went up over my calf. They were 16 inches. They were hot. Excuse me, they were hot. They weren't as hot as the chaps and leggings were.
Yeah. Let's see. We had the leggings. I bought a set of kangaroo boots one year. They were just special ordered to things. And they was old Dookie Green. But boy, them's the best pair of boots. I mean, I wore them for years. I don't know where Daddy got them. But I think we ordered them from the hardware store there in Inman. You know, that's back when they had hardware stores. You can go in there and get, you know, box 22 bullets, or you buy a rifle if you want to, you know. I'd save my money up and sometimes go pick up bottles, Coke bottles on the side of the road. And we'll go frog gigging or something and take all the bottles to Bloomer Williams up here, and he'd give me 10 cents or 5 cents a bottle, whatever it was. And I'd give me a box of 22s. If I fell short and didn't have enough money, he'd give me a box of shorts.
I was working in a store, and we sold Brown and stuff, and I bought a pair of those Brown and kangaroo boots, and they were green, and I wore those things for years, had them resold a couple of times. They were about as close to being waterproof as a leather boot as some type of non-rubber boot as I'd ever had, but those were the most comfortable ones. They were real expensive back even in the 60s, but I wore those things, I bet, for 20 years, maybe longer than that. They were green like that, and could have been somebody else. Could have been somebody else made them. Cabela's made something like that for a while, but, you know, they made it where you couldn't use kangaroo leather. Most places banned it, but that's the best wearing pair of boots, regular hunting boots I've probably ever owned, too.
Right, exactly. You know, it had to be the same boot because they fit like a glove. And just never, ever, if I've ever owned another pair of boots like that. But they were really nice, really nice. But we don't do much hunting anymore. Dad's got some age on him, and we took a lot of videos. We had old camcorder. We had a VHS, you know, camcorder. So we took videos every year, and that's over there on the other side of the farm with Dad the other day, and he had one out looking at it. So, oh, boy. Just, you know, a lot of memories. Back in the day, I guess.
Bird hunting. Of course, I always liked to dove hunt and stuff like that when I was in high school, and that was kind of just a party hunt type thing. We enjoyed it. Had grilled afterwards, cookout afterwards, had a big time. Well, kind of a social event type thing, and then I got interested in deer hunting probably about 20 years or so, bow hunting mostly, but then I really about 15 years ago, I guess, and maybe longer, that I just got where I just wasn't lost interest in it as much as I loved it for years. I still like the sheep. I loved hunting for years, but I just, you get a boy where you just, it doesn't appeal to you anymore. Not everybody's like that, but I've been a hunter since I was probably 6 or 7 years old. I lived that life and enjoyed it, but got a point where I couldn't, especially where I couldn't, you know, didn't feel as comfortable climbing trees or wading trout streams like I used to. And didn't appeal to me getting out there somewhere and breaking my leg or something, getting stuck somewhere. N4DJC Friday.
Or NUE. Well, I run a trap line up here in the winter, up here at the deer camp. I got a pond on on the property, and it's doggone muskrats and beavers. Boy, they do a lot of damage, you know. So when I inherited the place, I just went ahead and got me a permit because I had to do something with those muskrats. They burrow up in the dam of the pond, and then, you know, dam's leaking a little bit, and it just, you know, it's been no maintenance has been done on it for probably 40 years, and so, you know, I can get into trapping now. I kind of like that, but I don't do the big stuff anymore. It's just like you, I lost interest. I did two deployments, and when I come back from the second one, I just didn't have no desire for it.